Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. We are going to be discussing something in our show this evening that is related to everyone. No matter where you are, no matter what part of the planet you may be living your life in, money. Yes, it is something that in our culture we have to deal with. But a question can be asked of you. Has money been a topic of conversation within your marriage, within your family, within any context of association with friends and family? Have you been willing to really look at the changes that have evolved and that you need to pay attention to? Now, when I say that, I don't want you to become paralyzed with fear. That's not what we're going to be talking about this evening. We are going to be talking about how, if you're willing to educate yourself, if you are willing to be open to understanding that you can have a very good life with planning, even when things go topsy-turvy. My guest is Lori R. Sackler. This is a woman who has quite a background in the financial environment. She is a certified investment management analyst, a certified financial planner, and a non-practicing certified public accountant. She wrote a book in 2013 about the M word, the money talk, and then the M word, How to Have a Money Talk, was done in 2016. She did do a radio show in New York City regarding the M word, money talk, and this is her latest one, The Money Talk Every Family Needs to Have About Wealth and Their Financial Future, a five-step plan to guide you through life's transitions. The M word, believe me, we're going to be sharing some very good things with you. Lori, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Lori, I would like you to share a little bit about how it was that you, as a woman, determined that you were going to be deeply involved in the environment of investments, of dealing with money. Was this something when you were growing up that you said, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm a musician. I actually went to school and got a degree in music and a master's degree. And then as a young adult, my mom passed away suddenly. And it really did sort of forced me to rethink my life and my future. It was like the rug was pulled out from underneath me. I had no financial knowledge. I had no understanding of money. And it was just an opportunity to think through what my future was going to look like. And I decided it was time that I needed to figure all this out. So I worked my way through business school, and I went to school at night to get a number of licenses. And I've worked in the industry now for over 25 years. And, you know, I think my journey is a journey about my personal need to understand money and to figure out a way to make a living and succeed financially and be an independent woman, which my mom was not. But it was also something that I developed an interest in, and I became passionate about, and I learned that this is something that I really love to do, and this whole concept of money talk is part of my history also, where money was a taboo in my family. Nobody talked about it, and particularly after my mother's death, it was definitely not on the table for discussion. So I think, you know, my personal history and journey has informed me in ways I never expected. I never expected to be where I am today, but it's great, and I applaud you for asking that question, because I think all of us need to remember that life is a journey and things can happen, and we can take different pathways along the way. that will inform us in new ways and allow us to grow in ways we never, ever thought possible. So it's been challenging, but it's been fun also. Yeah.
One of the biggest conflicts within families I have found is when it comes to discussing money. If there is a couple and they have children, there's mm-hmm. all kinds of attitudes that can occur. And so often I have found a lot of the discord that comes up, let's say when a family member dies, what's happening in a will, all of these different things, there is literally war. And mm-hmm. I've known families that have had tremendous assets that the heirs, by the time they finished with the attorneys, because this person didn't like this and the other person didn't mm-hmm. like that, and someone else as a distant relative said, hey, wait a minute, my hand's up, money is owed to me. Everything was wiped out. And then mm-hmm. you have so many different variables that go on. This is the purpose behind your book, because you say communication and trust are mm-hmm. or become part of the family culture. Now, this is something that most people I know of, they might talk about the grocery money, but they're not talking about anything bigger. And this is a challenge. And when I started reading your book, The M Word, The Money Talk, I said, okay, this has covered so many different arenas that you have had exposure to. And I thought, okay, this is really good. Let's begin with a foundation. Let's start off with a couple that has children, they're growing up. Let's begin with that. Let's say, what is really a good thing to do?
Right. So before we do that, can I just give a little background? Because what you're sure. talking about is so true that a lot of people just don't have these conversations and money conversations. So I've witnessed people struggling. And I see oftentimes families will make decisions without carefully thinking through the consequences. And talking to the family members, they're going to be impacted. And inevitably, there's a breakdown in communication and trust and a loss of family money and harmony. And that's part of the reason I've gotten involved in this. And just to kind of give a little statistic and weight to the situation, there's a 70% failure rate in transferring assets across generations. And breakdown in communication and trust is at the heart of that. And I have come to the conclusion that all transitions have the risk of failure if there's not open, transparent conversation. And so the whole idea, whatever age we're at, we need to make sure that we're having these important conversations while we're going through different life transitions. And of course, you know, you want to start when your children are young, right? I think that was your question, right?
Yes.
So so look, I say that, you know, when the kids are around 10 years of age, I mean, they're fully aware, they're learning about money in elementary school. I mean, schools now are, I've spoken to school groups and associations of teachers who are really thoughtful about helping kids understand what money is for, how to use it, give them some life skills along the way so that they're not like from when I graduated from high school. I didn't know anything about it, right? But, you know, you and as parents or as, you know, caregivers can think about ways that you can reinforce that and help your children, people you're in charge of, understand money principles. And so, you know, I oftentimes think, as basic as it is, allowance is a good way to begin. You know, you create a set of tasks. You think about how you want to help your child understand how money can be used. You can spend it, you can save it, and you can give it to charity. And that was Rockefeller's formula, giving his kids a dollar certain time frames, and they had to learn that this is how you create a life around money. You divide it up into pies, and you think of ways that you can orchestrate your money management in a thoughtfully and mindfully. And this will help children. It'll help adults all understand how they can develop good money habits, and that is very, very important. Now, if you're in a family where there's not a money family history that's positive around how you acquire, use, and manage it, then, you know, that's going to be more challenging. And, of course, we see generational patterns between families. These, you know, you can be a spender like your grandfather was, or you can be mindful and say, I'm going to choose a different course than my grandfather and my father. So I think, you know, helping kids understand the value of money, how to use how to use it intelligently, how to acquire it, how to manage it. Those are principles that you can start out very young with kids and help them develop those skills that will be invaluable over their lives.
I agree. You also cover some very significant things that I really feel we need to be aware of, and that is social and cultural attitudes, because mm-hmm. this has a big impact. If you're from Asia, there may be cultural attitudes, you know, or from Australia or in Europe or in Africa. These are situations that often people are very challenged by. You also, mm-hmm. in your book, discuss the difference between men and women in their thinking. Mm-hmm. And yeah. this can be a big bone of contention, because yeah. if you have the husband that's, let's say, starting a business, and you've got this, that, or the other, and then the wife said, well, you've got to look at this, we've got our kids, we've mm-hmm. got to look right. at such and such. Let's address that for a moment, too.
Yeah, so you bring up the question, you know, why is it so difficult to talk about money? And yes, there are cultural barriers. They could be, you know, cultural barriers across different countries, right? They can vary, right? There can be family history that makes it difficult, and gender differences. And I find that very, very fascinating, because oftentimes I'm sitting with a couple and I see this play out, this conflict, not because this is individualized, but it's very universal, the differences. And so let me kind of help your audience understand this. So there are very profound differences when it comes to money and making money decisions between the sexes. And they're brain-based, so it's how our brains operate, and they're universal regardless of language or culture and a geography. And so these differences have been confirmed by dozens of studies in over 30 countries with a million participants. So it's important to understand that, yes, you're special, and these conflicts you think are special, but, you know, they're playing out in a lot of families. So and as a result, there's differences in how women and men set goals and priorities. These differences will affect how they invest, you know, risk tolerances, the time horizons. And then finally, the way men and women communicate is very different because of the way our brains are operating. And so all of that contributes to conflict. But we need both brains. We need both sexes to make, you know, good decisions in a relationship. So, and I should say all sexes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you need to understand that these are things that need to be talked about, and you know, could be an advisor, you know, accountant, attorney, or financial advisor that can help negotiate and navigate these differences. So, ultimately, what you want to come up with through conversations is a plan that works for everyone, right? You want to address the woman's needs and differences and wants, and of course, women want to be validated, they want to be listened to, they want to be heard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to say, yeah, well, here's a guy who likes transactions. He likes short-term gains, you know, preferably not losses. So you have to navigate those waters and come up with something that satisfies everyone. And it doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's a series of conversations and really understanding the differences as you're evolving through this whole process.
There's another aspect. You've got so many different points of information mm-hmm. in your book, and of course, we're not going to be able to cover all of them, but there is a big one. And you mm-hmm. have young people today, and many of them have never had an experience like we did with COVID. So they are in a dilemma. They go, how do I begin to even plan for the future? It's all I can do to look at what I need to do today. Well, that's not mm-hmm. unusual. Every generation is going to have its challenges. But one of the challenges that is evolving is that we are living a lot longer. And mm-hmm. where there was, I remember with my grandfather, that you were supposed to hit, you know, pass away when you were 60 years old. Well, my goodness, mm-hmm. look at how many people are living to be 100 and older. And mm-hmm. I know I've done interviews with people that are still working and active in a wonderful way, And they, you know, one person is 100 and he's going to be 105, I think it is. And you look at these and you go, wow, here I am in my 20s or 30s. What am I, if I live, do I think I'm going to live that long? Most young people would say, I don't even have the capacity of thinking about that. But this is something in the world today that is very, very real. And there's so many people that are still working. They're active in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and they plan on working until they, you know, ready to leave this earth where they can't do it anymore. So this is something that needs to be planned for, and life can happen in unusual ways that make you very concerned about money. This is something that is really a huge shift, the age factor and planning for retirement. Let's address that for a moment.
Right. So when you think about Social Security, it was passed in the 40s, right? And the life expectancy there was, what, 55, 60, 65? So, and that's why Social Security has been extended out over the years. People are living longer. There needs to be more money available for people living longer. And people are working into their 70s, right? So the landscape has changed dramatically. And you're right. It's a, look, if you're a wealthy individual, top 10%, 1/10, whatever it is, these are not necessarily concerns that you're going to have on a day, you know, on a daily basis if you are able to build out a nice nest egg. But if you're not, and the majority of people are dealing with this, where they are saying to themselves, well, how am I going to handle that long life expectancy? Well, at the end of the day, people are working longer. I think that's part of what's happening. You're seeing them. And there's plenty of demand for good workers in the workforce right now, thankfully. And people can go back into the workforce and find work. But fundamentally, if you're in your 20s and 30s and 40s, it's a wake-up call that, yes, you might live well beyond age 100. And then the question remains, how are you going to support that life expectancy? And so saving, investing, learning certain principles in life as to how you're going to prepare for that moment when, yes, you're no longer working and now you have to be sustained by your assets. It's daunting. And inflation as a retired person, whatever age you are, is a very big risk factor. And then, of course, when you retire is another important piece. If you're retiring when the market's up, you know, that's not bad. But when the market, if you go through an economic downturn and that's when you're pulling money out, that can affect your life experience. Your ability to financially manage long life expectancy. So, you know, the onus is on the individual to think about this and developing good, healthy habits. You know, the other day, my son, I have a 30-year-old son who's, you know, thankfully he's launched, he's got a great job, and he reminds me, Ma, you're going to be okay in retirement. You've been saving all your life. And, you know, that's a great, that's just really a wonderful endorsement for my son that he witnessed this. So, you know, and I think that's the onus that people have to think about. You know, how are you going to be able to put money aside to be able to manage this? Because it's definitely a bigger risk now. In some parts of the population, life expectancies are going down. But in general, if you live a healthy lifestyle, if you take care of yourself and you're in a situation you can afford to take care of yourself, yes, you will live a very long life. And then that's, it's very important you figure out how you're going to plan for that.
Trust. Now, this is in your section of your book, Preparing the Inner Landscape, and you make the statement, people around the globe have lost trust in the financial services industry, according to the 2021 Edelman Trust Barometer. Now, this is on so many levels, and I think when COVID hit, that even made it a deeper lack of trust. This is something that really needs some attention. How is it being addressed? You deal with this. This has been your world for over 25 years. So how do you deal with this?
Well, it's interesting. We were out with a colleague and a mentor and talking about our business and how the business is evolving. And we both agreed that trust is the number one reason why people work with other people. I mean, yes, you can have expertise and experience. That's a given. But finding someone you can trust as a professional person or advisor, but also having trust in individuals who can be there when you need them. That's the other side of the coin. If you are dealing with aging parents or aging family members who are going to need help down the road, I mean, trust is critical. And you're right. The financial services industry is pretty low on the trust level. It has creeped up, actually. It's coming up a bit. But at the end of the day, you know, finding I always say that any industry, whether it's financial services or not, it's a trust business. You literally have to pick. And that is the number one reason why people work with other people in my industry, for example, because they have to have that level of trust. And we are we're individuals. And of course, we have to rely on trusting someone or trusting a group of people to accomplish what we want to accomplish in life, whether you're in the workforce with a team or you have family members and you need their help. Finding people you can trust is really, really important. But, you know, I would argue that they're out there. You just have to find them. And it may be within your own circle of friends and family, or you may have to go elsewhere. But, yeah, trust is something that has been somewhat eroding in the public sphere, but I, at the same time, am very optimistic. There's plenty of talented, trustworthy people out there that can help you make a difference. Yeah.
Let's talk, too, about communication, because you bring this point out over and over again, that when you are wanting to inform someone, educate someone, and you talked about your mother-in-law in the book and how she's in her 80s.
To go there.
Yes, yeah. But you had to deal with her. Number one, you had respect for her. And number two, you didn't talk down to her. You didn't treat her like she was 2 years old. You said, all right, this is what we need to do. And there was a real need for her to be aware of what she could do. Share a little bit of that story. It's in the book, and I think it's significant because of age differences, the thinking processes of different generations is something, and I've said this to so many clients that I've had, be aware when you're talking with your grandmother or your mother or whoever, you have to look at the time frames that they have evolved through. And that's not something most people consider. So let's address that.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, I do have a section on age and making sure you understand the generation that you're talking to. What were their struggles? You know, people who were products of World War II, you know, they believed in hard work. Life is a struggle, but you can get ahead if you work hard and you stay diligent. And you know, boomers were much more materialistic. I mean, every generation's different, right? So you have to understand the generation. You have to understand the language that generation is comfortable with. And I think for me, particularly with my mother-in-law, you know, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law relationships can be challenging at times, right? I mean, I captured the heart of her adorable son, and, you know, now I was probably more of a priority for a period of time, and she had to make that transition. So it was not an easy relationship for us. But I think what I was able to do is, you know, work through the issues using my five-step process with her. I mean, she was a great example for me to understand that this would work. And I did it in a way that was professional, respectful. I knew she needed help, and I was somebody that she trusted, right? I mean, she may have found fault with me in certain ways, and there was competition. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, she felt she could trust me. And I think what she learned through the whole process is that, yes, in fact, having a good, trustworthy person around you during a very traumatic time, she lost her husband of 50 years, who she adored. You know, having somebody there to walk you through the process, have multiple conversations, and treat it as in a professional way, you know, not getting into the, you know, I talk about how to avoid conflict in the book, you know, when conflict will come up, because people, when money's a conversation, they can break down to their inner children and start to act out. But there are ways to deal with that. So I think at the end of the day, what was really great about the experience, it was hard for sure, is that she developed a level of respect for me that she had never had before. And she actually articulated it, how much she appreciated what I had done at a very difficult time in her life. And it did change our relationship. So, you know, I do say in the book that when you have successful money talks, you get through transitions in a positive way, you can develop healthier relationships with family members. And that is part of the reason I wrote this book, because I have seen so many examples of families that are dysfunctional. They break down. They don't talk to each other. It's very difficult for them to come to the table. But, you know, I just have always been optimistic. If you just keep pushing people forward to become their better self, have tools that they can use, that they can learn from, and give them examples and resources to work with, then I think there's a better chance that people will get through these transitions successfully and the money will be protected. And that's the ultimate goal, keep families and finances in harmony, you know, both of them.
And I think that having communication, dealing with aging parents, this is something yes. that so many are having to deal with, and the costs, let's say, of yes. facilities. Just in the thousands of dollars, so we want to keep them at home, and how to work through the finances there. Power of attorney, you bring up mm-hmm. different points of information there. So your book, Money Talk, really does, the M word, is a very significant thing because we don't often realize that there's going to be a lot of variables in life. It would be so nice if we could say, gee, at the age of 30, this is what's supposed to happen, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 120. All right, so mm-hmm. you've got all of these things that are indoctrinated into one, but sometimes life smacks you right up the side of the head, and you go, oh, now what do I do? And when you can have that trust in an advisor. All right, so let's ask another big question. How do you find, what do you do if you want to research a financial advisor, no matter what your age is? You could be 20s up to 100. If you want someone to work with, what do you do? How do you find that person?
Yeah, you know, I have a whole chapter on that. And I just want to say that I think that of the five-step process I've created, number four, which is, you know, getting the right help, getting, you know, getting outside counsel, is to me the most important step, because I have learned that it's really difficult for people to do this on their own and to do it in a way where they're going to stay the course, conversation's not going to break down, people can help. I think having somebody, it doesn't have to be necessarily a professional. It could be a family member that everybody trusts, could be a friend, but who has the knowledge, the skills, and the ability to keep the conversations on course. So if you want to, let's say there's no one in the family, and yes, I would probably agree that finding advisors is the best route. Yes, so finding the right advisor. So there's so many advisors to choose from, right? You need an attorney, around the will and the estate plan, an accountant for tax purposes. I talk about the financial advisor. There's all different, you know, types of advisors that come with all different credentials, and I do go through in quite detail on all the differences. You know, it could be a case manager, a care manager, if in fact you are an individual who's dealing with aging parents, for example, or aging loved ones. Oftentimes a case manager or a care manager, someone that you can hire to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together or even take care of the loved one. So there's all different types of advice and even psychological counseling. I mean, oftentimes bringing in a therapist to deal with some touchy issues could be helpful. Maybe mom needs some counseling. Maybe she's going through grief. Maybe she's got some health issues that are interfering. And, you know, maybe she needs a new doctor. I mean, I talk about the whole host of them, but finding someone that's really right for you, you know, it's going to take some research. Certainly you go and you ask for, you can ask for referrals, you know, ask your friend or family member, you know, who are the people that you're working with. Oftentimes people will get that information. You know, you can go, the online search engines are really, really helpful. I mean, I've had people find us from around the world, for God's sakes, because they're looking for a specific type of person or type of team, certain credentials, certain kind of practice. So, you know, making sure that person fits you, has the expertise that you need, has experience is obviously trustworthy, but I also talk about the personal components. Is this a person that's going to listen to you? Is this a person who has the right chemistry that will relate to the members of the family? I mean, I oftentimes find that women advisors are helpful because women in general, and this is going back to the gender differences, we have stronger connectivity between our emotion, memory, and communication centers. So oftentimes women can help navigate families through these priorities. And you know, not necessarily a man obviously can do it also, but finding the right person is definitely thinking through all the ingredients, both professional and personal. And you there, you know, if you're looking for a certified financial planner, you can go to that website. If you're looking for a CPA, I mean, there's plenty of professional associations out there that can help you navigate the neighborhood as well. So, you know, I would say people spend quite a bit of time finding the right doctor. You know, if they have to have open heart surgery, well, they're not going to go to somebody who's been in business for 5 years, right? You know, probably a lot. And so, you know, I always say that finding the right professional to help you with your finances is as important as finding the right surgeon or the right practitioner or the right healthcare professional. So you'd want to take your time, make sure you find, and, you know, come with questions. I offer a whole bunch of them in the book. You know, ask them some difficult questions, like how do you get paid? You know, like there's a lot of different ways to get paid out there. You know, what kind of clients do you work with? I mean, am I a good fit? I mean, all that is part of the dialogue. But yeah, there's some really, really talented people out there. So there's no shortage of people to choose from.
Lori Sackler, this has been a very good conversation, and I really appreciate all of the detail. And just as you've mentioned, the questions that you can go into an attorney or your CPA or your financial advisor with, you can have them in hand, and you can make your notes. And there is that factor of trust that has to be there. Mm-hmm. We've all heard horror stories, so we want to know that that factor of trust is going to be in place. Now, the book, the Money Talk book, the M word, and your last name, let me give the first and your last name. It's Lori, L-O-R-I, R. Sackler, S-A-C-K-L-E-R, and that is her name spelled out for you. The book, the M word, the Money Talk book, you can find it on Amazon, but you can also go to her website, which is mword.com, M for money, word.com. Lori Sackler, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much. And boy, this book just gives us so many resources to explore, questions to ask, and more than anything else, we come away informed. Thank you for being my guest.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was really great.
We are saying goodbye to Lori Sackler, and we are going to be continuing the program. I am not going to be available by phone if you wanted to call or talk with me, but that's okay. We're continuing. We're taking a little bit of a break, and I've got more good things to share with you. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to MrsSebo'sClassics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Who's coming up on the Donna Sebo Show and Warriors for Peace? Well, tomorrow evening, we're going to be talking with David McGee. His book is titled Things Have Changed. Now, what is this about? Well, it is about how, as adults, we need to address, especially with our young people, the shift in thinking and the modalities of environments that they are contending with and will be contending with perhaps in the future. So we're going to be talking with David McGee about that. And then we're going to be speaking on Friday with Dr. Tan, tocotrienols. Now, Dr. Tan, I interviewed a number of years ago. This is a man who had dedicated his life to researching nutritional benefits for wellness. Tocotrienols, the research that was done on this was absolutely massive and amazing. Well, there is another item that he has discovered for well-being, and we are going to be talking about that. Unanswered questions, Ray McGinnis. We're going to be discussing so many things relating to 9/11. Our conversation, I think you will find intriguing and interesting. And then Scott Glendall, that's all I ever wanted to be. Splitsville, Jeffrey Stevens, Into the Field of Suffering with David Check. And then The War on Whites with Ed Brodow. I'm telling you, we've got some wild and woolly subjects that we're going to be discussing, and I do want to say on Warriors for Peace, the next program is about firescaping your home. Two women have put together an incredible publication relative to being able to keep your home as safe as you possibly can keep it. But things to understand about the environments that we live in. And I know I live in an environment here in the Pacific Northwest. We're surrounded by forest. And it is really in quite a beautiful area. Look, it's city. It's not what I would say being out in the country. But you feel like you're out in the country. So this and so much more is going to be coming up on the programming during this month of September. And I also want to mention to you, check out the author showcase. You, those authors that are featured there have supported my programming. And because of that, we are able to put them into a special positioning. You can go right to their interviews. No challenge with that whatsoever, and also with the links to the television programming that I may have done with some of them. Then I want to let you know tomorrow, for those of you in the state of Washington, I am going to be doing a talk and demonstrations of skills of mind at the Federal Way restaurant, the IHOP restaurant. And if you want information about it, you find the details in my newsletter that just came out on the 1st. So check out my website for that. But also, if you know, you can register so that you get that newsletter. I only send out the newsletter once a month, but it's something that keeps you aware of my appearances coming up, and September's loaded with them. And also, we're going into the last quarter of the year. Can you believe that? It's amazing. So anyway, if you want information about the IHOP restaurant, which is where this gathering is occurring, you can call Sandy at 253-297-6649, and she will give you all of those details. So I will be arriving there about 4:30 in the afternoon and will be available for many sessions before and afterwards. So I wanted to mention that to you. That is tomorrow evening in Federal Way, Washington. So we're going to be moving along. I've got some other things that I want to be able to share with you. And again, I want to say I am not going to be able to take any phone calls. So take care. We are going to continue, and we've got quite a few odds and ends of information that we'll be able to share. I thought I would, well, I was thinking, what could I give to you in the way of a personal experience that I went through relative with working with money? And the reason I wanted to do this is to make you aware it, this can happen to anyone. When I married my husband, he had had a bankruptcy. My credit was pristine. I didn't have any problems with credit. But at the time I married him, there were a lot of things going on, a lot of changes that were evolving relative to people that had gone through bankruptcy. Well, anyone that has gone through that environment, and it's a very uncomfortable place to be. I don't know of anyone that likes being in bankruptcy, period. There is just, you've got different types of bankruptcy. There's all kinds of hassles. You're dealing with creditors, all kinds of things. Well, he had gone through a bankruptcy the year before I met him. And that was something that he was having to deal with. It wasn't impacting him very much. When we got married, though, it was a big deal. So what occurred is I had no knowledge about bankruptcy. That word I'd heard, but there was no relationship to anything in my life, in whatever you could imagine. So what we found, because it was shortly after that, it was within a year after we were married that we were transferred up, he was transferred up to the Pacific Northwest, where we've lived ever since. Well, what occurred is, of course, we go to a bank and we are wanting to buy a car. Guess what? You got it. Bankruptcy comes up. And it was in his name. So this is something that really started a level of education for me. And that education process went on relative to bankruptcy for a couple of years. But this is what happened to us. We wanted to get a new car. Because of the bankruptcy on his credit report and the fact that we were married, that affected me just as strongly. So we went in to a bank. Now, at the time, we were living in California. This was before we ended up moving up here. So we wanted to get this new car. And the one we had was inadequate. It was transportation, but it really wasn't what was desired or needed. And we were a young couple, for heaven's sake. So that's something that my husband really wanted to get a newer car. He was substantially taller than me and was a bigger person. And so my little Honda just, you know, he felt like he was in a tin can. So anyway, we find the vehicle that we want. And we go in and we talk to the salesperson. And the guy's name was Bill. He finds out about the bankruptcy. And he said, you know, you need to deal with this. So I would suggest that you go and talk to a bank, but you need to be able to deal with this bankruptcy situation because otherwise you're not going to be able to get this new car. So we took his advice and we go to the bank that was in the area of California, and we end up talking to the bank manager. The bank manager listened to the story. We knew who the creditors were that were the money was owed to. And she did something that was very interesting. She said, I will be happy to provide a loan to you, but this is what you are going to need to do. You need to itemize out all of the creditors that money is owed to, and you need to contact each and every one of them and tell them you want to pay everything back in full. And what you will do is you will make arrangements with each one of the creditors as to the monthly payment that you will make. And come back to me in a year. Now, at the time, for us as a young couple, that was a $5,000 amount of money that had to be paid back to creditors. Well, to us as a young couple, that was like $1 million. But what happened? We end up after talking with the bank manager, and she said, you need to reestablish credit as a couple, so you need to be able to buy something on credit. So we did both things. Went home. I was the one that put together all the information about the creditors. I was the one that called the creditors, made the arrangements, and the people I talked with at the credit card companies, they just about fell off their chairs. They said, we don't have people calling saying they want to pay the bill. Well, what they did was this. They said, this amount of money is owed. And they said, we will not charge you any interest if you make a payment of XYZ dollars each month. We did that, and it took us a year. At the end of that year, we went into the bank. I presented all the records that I had kept on the monies paid. I got a letter of certification from the credit card companies that everything had been cleared. All the monies that were due had been paid. We take it into the bank. We also had done what she suggested, and that was buy a piece of furniture on layaway. And we had to make monthly payments on that. Well, we got a couch. We needed a couch. So we made payments on that. It was 1 year. We had a month, $1 extra in our budget to spend on whatever we wanted. Now think about that. Just $1 extra a month. But in 1 year, we went back to the bank, talked to the bank manager, and she looked at everything. Do you know, she said to us, I have been a bank manager for years. I have never, ever had anyone come in and do what I've asked them to do as you have done. You have your loan. You can get your car. That stunned me. But what stunned me even further, you know how when you have a bankruptcy, you are going to be on the record for 7, 10 years. They may have changed it. I don't know. But you're listed there that you suffered a bankruptcy. When we came up into the state of Washington, we went to a bank. We were brand new in the area. And my husband and I were very open about this had occurred. Well, they checked our credit rating. No bankruptcy information was listed there at all. Why? Because we had paid the creditors. It was as if it had never happened. This is something that I have shared with many people. Many times you can have a situation, and in this case, it was not me, but it was my husband that suffered the bankruptcy. But as a couple, then it was an onus on me as well. So that discipline of managing money was something I'd already been doing for years anyway, but it was something that when I did what I did, and when we agreed on this is what we were going to be doing. And don't get us wrong, this was not fun because it meant we weren't able to buy new clothes. We weren't able to do any of the extra things that perhaps we could have done. And it turned out, though, to be the right thing to do, even though we were, quote unquote, deprived. If people would say, gee, that's really tough. But when you go through lessons like that, you realize that you have a resilience and you have a choice about things. And dealing with money with integrity is very, very important. And as a woman, when I was a single parent, I had to do budgeting. When I was married, I always ended up, it seemed like, managing the money. But when you are a couple, working with money in that way is a good thing to do. And when you can see how you can accomplish things together, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And we live in a world today, people will tell you cash doesn't count, blah, blah, blah doesn't count. Let me tell you, I don't care what generation you belong to. I don't care what your financial status is. You have to be of the understanding that your management of money, how you look at things, dealing with savings, not looking at something like, gee whiz, I'm just so disempowered, I can't do this, that, or the other. Believe me, There are ways of working with money so that you can be in a positive positioning. And saving money is extraordinarily important. And building up a cash backbone is important, as well as if you're in a position to do investments, then you need to find someone that can explain things to you, just like we were talking about earlier with Money Talk. There is a diversification that is best to be done. Sometimes people are able to do that, and sometimes not. But when you can work together, and there's always in a marriage one that's better at managing money than the other. I was the one in the marriage that was better at managing money than my husband was. And he recognized that. So it wasn't a matter of, gee whiz, I'm better than you, or, hey, I'm the macho guy. No. He knew that he was not that good at managing money. He was terrible at it. He gave that responsibility to me. And that benefited me. And it benefited him big time, because our debt ratio was very low, typically. And then you hit situations in life. Maybe someone gets sick. Maybe you've got medical bills. You've got all kinds of things. I've gone through so many different things in my life experience. But you know what? You will have those people that are willing to work with you. Those people, just like that bank manager did with my husband and myself. And you may think, oh, this isn't fair. I shouldn't have to go through this. I should have this, that, or the other. There needs to be an understanding and a level of maturity that you realize things are things, but you need to manage your money. And then planning for the future sometimes can be thrown into the bathtub of dirty water. This is something that you may not expect. As I said in my conversation with Lori, my guest, life can hit you with a 2x4 and you are not expecting it at all. This wasn't in your planning. What do? You look at adaptation. You do whatever you need to do to adjust the circumstances accordingly. It is something that is so important. And remember, when you hit hard times, that is process of learning. You hit those hard times, don't feel like you're going to drown. Don't feel like you can't get up. You will have those feelings anyway. I say don't feel it, but let's be honest. They're going to be there. You're going to doubt yourself. You're going to have all kinds of challenges. However, if you understand one thing, and this was a phrase that a friend of mine, who was a very mature lady, and I was so very young, she shared with me. She said, remember, when things get tough, just say, this too shall pass, and keep on moving forward. Think about those words. This too shall pass, and you keep on moving forward. And there is something about the power of your thinking, your consciousness. Where are you going to put your energy? I did an interview with a teacher who was making a salary of $40,000 a year. He got married. He was a young teacher. He and his wife had a very open communication about money. They wanted a family. They ended up having 3 children. And he said, we sat down even before we started the family and worked out a plan that we were going to be able to implement. And he said, when the children started coming, they had done their savings and all of this. When their first child arrived, they had a big decision to make, because the wife had been working and the husband, obviously, is a teacher. And they sat down and they talked about the money. I said, all right, child care. Then child number 2 comes along. And they had to have a more serious discussion, because with every child, your experiences and expenses are going to become more intense. Child number 3 arrives. They have another conversation. And it was decided, when they sat down and they looked at the money output that they were experiencing, child care costs, everything else, it was decided by both of them that the wife, because she really wanted to stay with the children, it was going to be better for her to stay at home. They would live off of his salary. They would adapt in whatever way was necessary. And they'd have to be creative with what they were going to do because they couldn't afford to eat out in restaurants on a regular basis. And they would have to save. So they broke down their budgeting. And by the way, they also had managed to get into a home. So they had to break everything down. They did. They set up a retirement plan when the children were grown. And this was something the mother, when the third child was getting older and was in almost teenage years, then what occurred is she started to work part-time. They then did another reevaluation of how they were going to work with their money and how they were going to save their money. And talking about the kids, how are you going to get the education you want? What is it? There were all of these conversations that were going on. They ended up financially in a very positive positioning. But it was working with each and every segment. And he said, you know, we had a very rich life. We never felt poor. He said, there are so many things that are free, everything from concerts to, you know, different social environments they could be a part of, being spending time with other families in the neighborhood. He said, there was so much that we could do. He said, we learned how to work with thrift stores and different environments to get whatever it is that we felt that we needed. We never felt deprived. And he said, it was an attitude and it was also the actions that were taken. And this is what we need to remember. We need to remember that whoever we are, you may not have even a dollar a month extra to spend. I know what that's like. The key is to look at yourself as being a creative person. How can you take what you've got and make it work for you? And also, where can you enjoy environments where you have the freedom, like your public library? You can get movies, you can, and look at what's available through technology today. You don't have to pay huge cable fees. Through the internet, you can go to YouTube, you've got movies, you've got all kinds of things that are available, educational processes that you can learn from, documentaries. There is so much there. There is so much available to us, more than at any other time in our known history. So you've got all of this that you can work with. And if you are in the positioning of making good money and being able to experience that level of financial freedom, congratulations. You are then able to make investments and do other things. But there's so much available to you. And many times what you need to remember is you want to be around people that think positive, that don't talk down to you, but say, let's look at what's going on here and let's pay attention to how you're spending your money. Keep a diary on what you paid for, what you got. And at the end of a year, or maybe even just a couple of months, you go, all right, this, I could take the money I spent maybe on buying a $7 cup of coffee every morning. How could I take and put that into investment? What could I do? There's always a way. Believe me, there is always a way. And being creative, that is a given. So don't doubt yourself. Just know that you have got more power, capability, flexibility, and resources available to you than your family perhaps ever had. Reach for it. Don't be afraid to reach for the gold. That gold ring can be yours, as it was so often reached for with people on a carousel. But the gold ring of life is reaching for the best for yourself, for those that you love, and as a demonstration to others, they could do the same. Donna Sebo here. Well, we're out of time. I'm going to say goodbye, and we are going to be ready for the next show. God bless. Be well. Remember always, you're master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. I'll be talking to you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.